he can see on paper and see how it changed like a miracle into exactly what he wanted me to say. Then he will smile all pleased at himself. Ellen, he says to get my attention. I always think on my own when I sit with him. Yes? I understand from your teacher that you've taken to signing your papers differently. I wondered when somebody would catch it. Well, Ellen, he says, like he might be a little confused his own self, we could understand if you were misspelling your name, but you've been signing Foster as your last name this entire term. Did you realize that? Of course I know my last name, I tell him. Okay, then tell me your name. Ellen Foster. But that is not your last name. Would you like to talk about it? About what? About why you are using that name. You see, Ellen, sometimes children such as yourself, who have experienced such a high degree of trauma, tend to have identity problems. Do you follow me? Okay, go on. And these children express these identity problems in several ways. What I'm thinking of in particular is the child who has experienced what he or she feels to be an unbearable amount of pain, and this child might not want to be himself anymore. Are you with me so far? I understand. I told him the first day that if he had to talk to me, then he could just talk to me like I have some sense, just so he doesn't get ahead of how fast I can think. Okay, go on. It is not uncommon for such a child to pretend he is somebody else. He doesn't necessarily have to know that other person, just so he does not feel the pain anymore is all that matters. Okay, go on. I don't know who this Foster is, but it really doesn't matter. What does matter is that you open up and talk to me. Get that pain out of Ellen and she won't have to be somebody else. Lord, I say to him, I hate to tell him he's wrong because you can tell it took him a long time to make up his ideas. And the worst part is I can see he believes them. Go ahead, Ellen, tell me what you're thinking. It's okay. That may not be the name God or my mama gave me, but that is my name now, Ellen Foster. My old family wore the other name out, and I figured I would take the name of my new family. That one is fresh. Foster. I told him all that. I'm starting to see your point. Go ahead, he told me. Before I even met Stella or JoJo or the rest of them, I heard they were the Foster family. Then I moved in the house and met everybody and figured it was okay to make my name like theirs. Something told me I might have to change it legal or at a church, but I was hoping I could slide by the law and folks would think I came by the name Natural after a while. He laughed like I'd said a joke. After he explained it all to me, I felt like a fool for a minute. Then I asked him if I could keep using that name anyway, or if I needed to pick out another one. I just don't care for my old name, I said to him. I sure could use another one. If I have to give up Foster, then give me a while to think up a flashy one. When he stopped laughing, he said we were back to where we started. But I thought we had everything figured out, I said. Foster is not the right pick, so I'll think up something else. No, Ellen, the problem is not in the name. The problem is why you feel you need another identity. Not identity, just a new name. I wanted to write that big across the sky so he would understand and the picking into my head would stop. You are the one who is mixed up about me, I told him. He wrote that down fast and then said we would discuss it again next week. I said, I do not plan to discuss chicken shit with you, and then I left. He will not be seeing me again. I might be confused sometimes in my head, but it is not something you need to talk about. Before you can talk, you have to line it all up in order, and I had rather just let it swirl around until I'm too tired to think. You just let the motion in your head wear you out. Never think about it. You just make a bigger mess that way. I was too smart to let somebody find me living with a dead lady the second time around. They list names of funeral homes in the yellow pages, so I called one and said to come load her up, and she did not need to stop at the hospital, by the way. I picked the funeral home that advertised in fancy letters, "We specialize in embalming." That sounded reasonable, so they got our business. Then I called my Aunts Betsy and Nadine and broke the news about their dead mama. I know it is an ugly thing to say, but I think they were put out by her dying so near the holiday season. Betsy said, "Well, what do you think of that, and it's so near Christmas?" I was dying my own self to tell her, "Well, Betsy, why don't you see if the undertaking driver will stop and let you shop a minute on the way to the grave?" But I just said I thought now was as good a time as any for her to go. At least she didn't die and lay up in the house like they say my daddy did. That seems unnecessary to me, with all the people walking around that could find you dead and report you right away. Nadine said she would be over right away, like I just told her she'd won a prize off the radio and she'd be over to claim it in 3 shakes. And she was not kidding. Quick as a wink, before I could finish taking care of my project, here comes Aunt Nadine bustling through the back door, asking me where is her mother. I pointed to the bedroom, where you would expect her to be. If she had choked in the kitchen, I would have toted or pulled her somehow to her bedroom. Does she think I would leave her mama propped up at the kitchen sink or stretched out by the stove, I wondered? Anybody with any decency would honor the dead and fix them up in their own bed, especially after my experience. You learn by your mistakes. But I had this one fixed pretty as a picture. I did not want a soul to say I had not done my part, even down to the decorations. I found her Sunday hat she never wore and tilted it on her head the way a live woman might pop a hat on to ride to town in. Then the best part I will always be proud of was the nice frame I made all around her body. I put all the artificial flowers I could find from all those show jars around her end to end, so she looked set off like a picture. A still life, you might say. I finished up about the time the undertaking men and her girls showed up. The colored boys that loaded her up got a big kick out of my project, but Nadine said I was sick to do such a thing. "But I feel fine," I told her. I stood in the door and watched the boys work. One asked me if I thought I ought to be in the room now, and I said I wanted to watch this time. "Did you really fix her up like this?" the other one wanted to know. "There was only 2 of us here, and she is one, and the other one is me," I said, "for them to figure it out." "Well, I ain't never seen nothing like this before," he said. "Thanks," I said. "I worked hard, and I was in a hurry to finish up before folks got here so I could show her off. She does look fancy. It's a shame she has to leave," I thought. But they carried her off, and I sat in the room and heard Nadine and Betsy now start a fight in the front of the house. They fought over which one knew she was sick, and one accused the other of ignoring her, and look what happened. "You two go ahead and fight over who did not take care of the other one's mama. You two pass the blame back and forth like butter at your tables, and I will stay out of this circle in time of blaming, because I'm not guilty today. And even when she was so dead I could not help her any more, I made her like a present to Jesus so maybe he would take her. Take this one I got prettied up and mark it down by my name to balance against the one I held back from you before. But I do not trust this newly dead one, and when you look at her face, you and your wisdom and seeing will know that her smile is a trick for you. But please take her anyway. And be sure I get the credit for it, and if you can, please show me some way that you and me are even now. I do not think I want to go through this again." Nadine came in the room and told me to pack up, that I was going to her house to live with her and Dora. So I put my things all in my box and felt my whole body moving slow now to the record that had been on the wrong speed, but was now winding down, I could tell by the changes I heard coming on. And I put my things in my box and hoped I would not spin again to hear the same sound with nothing changed but the voices of people telling me when to come and go. As I laid out my clothes and folded them to leave, I reminded Jesus that this is not the way a girl needs to be. I told him again to please settle up with me so I could be a pure girl again and somebody good would love me. I stayed in the spare bedroom Nadine's old husband lived in. He did not die flat out, but he had a stroke of something and wasted away in here. I feature Nadine hiring a colored woman to look after him and saying impatient to her, "Don't tire me with the details, just say fine when I ask you how he's doing." Nadine would probably not want to hear the truth, much less see it for herself. That sums her up. So you have Nadine and Dara making up lies with the way they carry on together, like they are getting prettier every day, and what does not come in a shiny package from town is not worth the trouble of opening. But I could tell them some things about what else can come in a box. Oh, not the shiny kind, but the black one that fits down so cozy in a hole. That is the difference between them and me. I bet Nadine says to her girl some nights, "Oh, your daddy is not dead, Sugar Dara. He's up in heaven strumming on a harp with the angels, and he's looking down at how pretty you are smiling at us both right now." Chicken shit is what I would say. She might as well have said, "Sugar Dara, your daddy isn't dead. Why, he's just up at the North Pole, working away on scooters and train sets like a good elf should. Why, he's Santa's favorite helper." But they get some comfort out of the made-up stories, and if that helps them get along, then maybe I should not poke fun. But it is hard for me not to see the humor. I think they were pleased about my decision to keep to myself. If a girl was staying in my house that I did not want there, I certainly would be pleased as punch if she announced one night at supper that you will only be seeing me at meal times unless we happen to pass each other on the way to the toilet. Then it got my goat when I had to ask for somebody to help me get a new round of clothes. I was growing again. Nadine took me to the store, and I told her just to let me out with some money, and I would get exactly what I had to have. When Nadine took me shopping that day, I bought the most beautiful dress I had ever seen. I mean that. I saw it in with the ordinary dresses, and I said, "This is the dress for me." And the price was right, so I bought it, and it is still hanging in my closet, even though it comes up to my tail. I have grown right much since then. It is a dress you can catch somebody's eye with. It is like nothing you have ever seen, especially when I put it on and gazed in the store mirror. I said, "Lord, I could fall in love with my own self." It has a row of lace around your throat. Not too much, just enough to set your face off pretty. And then the dress is green like pine trees down to the waist, where it fans out in a navy blue skirt. The sash is reason alone for somebody to want that dress. Already hooked onto the dress with a bow you do not have to worry with. It is the kind of dress that decorates you in the front and the back both. Even when I am walking off, I thought while I watched myself turning in that dress, somebody could look at me and smile. That dress was the first sign my luck was changing. Some other girl and her mama could have snatched it up before I got to the store, but no, it was there waiting for old Ellen. I could pass for a princess in that dress, I thought, while I turned some more in the mirror. And the next day was Sunday. Oh, the day I went to church and figured that woman with all the girls lined up by her had to be the new mama for me. And while everybody else was praying, I looked over at my new mama-to-be and then up to the Lord and thanked him for sending me that dress. I said, "I look like I am worth something today, and she will notice the dress first and then me inside it and say to herself, 'I sure would like to have a little girl like her.'" Right after the service, I asked Dara what all I needed to know about the lady with the girls, like who she is and do all the girls belong to her, or are they nieces and friends of the family. Dara whispered back to me like she might be talking about special handicapped children behind their backs. She said they are the foster family and that lady would take in anything from orphans to stray cats, or so her mama said. That fit my description perfect, and I started thinking hard about how to be her new girl. My new mama says, sure, Starletta can come stay with us, and why doesn't she just ride the school bus home with me on Friday? Have you ever felt like you could cry because you know you just heard the most important thing anybody in the world could have spoke at that second? I do not care if the president had just declared war, although that is something to think about. I do not care if 1,000 doctors had just said, congratulations, sir, you are the father of a bouncing baby something. All that mattered in my world at that second was my new mama and the sound of yes in my ears. Oh, yes, Starletta is welcome here. I will bus before I get back to school to tell her to pack her bags. You are coming here to my house this weekend, and be sure to bring some of your little rubber bands because I will be asking you to plait my hair again. You come to my house and I'll give you anything you want, I thought about telling her, but I did not talk then about giving and receiving. I did not want her to think I was bringing her there to give her things she needed. It was just Starletta, the girl, I was after, and she could tote my bed and my checkerboard curtains back to her house if she felt like it. But it is just Starletta I want to squeeze so hard she will remember that every time somebody loves her good. And I want her just to enjoy herself and let me give her without the talking all she has coming her way. Lord, I do owe her. And all I want in return is to wake up on Monday morning knowing the two of us are even. Lord, then we will be all straight. Then I will not miss her so bad. We will be even friends, and I will not need to prove a thing to her ever again. And she will remember me good when she is old enough to think and sort through her own past, to see all the ways I slighted her. Oh, no, not by selling her down a river or making her wash my clothes, but by all the varieties of ways I felt God chose me over her. And I will tell you, it is hard and not one bit decent to keep on with that sort of thinking when you have seen all this world has to offer. Staying at Nadine and Dora's house was not as bad as I thought it would be. I had plenty of time to myself, which is something I always enjoy. The only problem is that all that free time leaves your head open for thinking, and before you know it, your brain slips an idea in, and you have to shoo it away like that baby Roger crawling around in my business. So I try to keep my head pretty full at all times. But as soon as the spare room opens up in there, here comes somebody like my daddy settling in, thinking he might make himself right at home. But I got my own ideas about what comes and goes through my head, and I intend to think about what I please from now on. But I figure it will take a while to get that system down pat. Whenever I came out to eat or do my business, Dora or Nadine wanted to know what I did in my room. I should have said I was going over how grateful I am to have them in my life, but I was afraid they might believe me, so I said I was reading. What are you reading? Oh, I'm just reading ahead for school. It starts up again in 2 weeks, and I figured I'd work ahead a little. Well, aren't you smart, Nadine says to me like she is honest to God pleased. That surprised me, and I looked at Dora and waited for her to say, but I'm really your smart girl, right, Mother? And then I looked back at Nadine and waited for her to say some variety of, sugar, Dora, you are the smartest little girl in the whole world. Now they are both happy again, and I leave them smooching on each other. Lord, I say to myself, and wonder if I could have turned out like that. Mainly, I looked in my old microscope to kill time. It was in good shape, even though I'd carted it around in my box. I kept the slides rolled up in toilet paper cushions, and then I laid them in their little individual cases. Nobody knew about those slides. I did not want Dora breathing on them, and I certainly did not want her mama asking me questions. Something that small needs to be kept private to yourself. I only viewed the slides when everybody was asleep. Then I would pretend I was on the brink of a discovery, and then here it is. After all these years of research and science, I have found the mysterious Euglena. I had looked at that slide 100 times, and I knew it was made in a factory in town, but that is the way I enjoyed playing. I didn't see anything wrong with it just as long as I kept in mind that I was old Ellen, not a laboratory doctor. Euglena was just one of the slides, but it was my favorite. Euglena. That always seemed to make a nice name for a girl. I think it is something I might keep in mind if I ever get a girl baby. Nadine wants to know what I would like for a Christmas present. She says she and Dora plan to get me a little something. All I can think of to tell her is a bigger microscope, but she does not know about this one. I just say, you two don't worry about me and just take that money and get your own self something nice. You already bought me these clothes, I told her. But she says it's Christmas and everybody in this house gets a present whether you want one or not. Well, in that case, I told her, I could use a handy pack of white paper. Not the writing kind, but the painting kind. I only got 5 sheets left. Is that all, she asked me? That is all I can think of now. There is nothing, though, like a house decorated up for the holiday. A live tree stuck over in the corner lit up flashy, everybody wondering if it might snow. I even put some holly across the foot of my bed and admired how festive it all looks. I say to myself, old Ellen has not lost the holiday spirit. What can I give Dora and Nadine? Lord knows I have a load of money saved, but it would take every penny to buy something to suit them, and I need to hang on to that money for my own business. If you do not spend money on Christmas, the only thing left to do is make any presents you need to give. Since I have a talent in art, I can make a picture fit for them to hang on a wall, and even if they hate it, I can still be proud of giving something I approve of. It has to be a picture of something friendly they would like. Maybe some cats or a covered bridge. I can do both. I learned how out of a library book. They could use some art on the wall, even if it is the copied kind. I do not think they would go for one of my experiment pictures or the one I call Brooding Ocean. So they get some fuzzy cats. They do not take long to paint, but if you do not know a thing about art, it will look to you like it took me forever. Then I sign my name Ellen Swirly at the edge of a paw. It looks good, but it is not something I would have in my own house, but just as long as they like it. I do not think they even know I have that talent. Won't that be a surprise? What do you two do on Christmas? I asked Dora when she pokes her head in my room. I was just coming to tell you supper's ready. I did not intend to report on what me and my mama always do alone. And she sent the alone part out to me with some spit and twist to it. Well, I intend to be here and I intend to know what to expect because I need to know when to give you two my present. Present, she says, just like I thought she would. Then she comes on in my room, sits on my bed, and tells me the highlights of all the Christmases she can remember. And she looks up to the corner of the room, and I know she was watching all her past presents of dolls and playhouses and mittens dancing on the wall. Dora, I say when I get tired of watching her little parade my own self, I did not ask for a list, I just need to know how you two go about celebrating. Like, do you make eggnog? Do you stand around and sing? Do you exchange presents at night, or do you, get everything all at once in the morning? She tells me they usually sit around on Christmas Eve and feel excited. Then Santa Claus comes that night, and you wake up the next morning and you can be surprised. When she was telling me, her voice was all rushy, and I had to smile when I said to myself, Dora, let me tell you a thing or two. There is no Santa Claus, and you cannot always count on getting everything you want. You'll see. And when you wake up that day and Santa has not laid everything out you dreamed of, or he might have missed your house completely, then you have to be brave, and if you come to me, we can talk. But I just say, Dora, suppose you don't get everything you ask for. What happens then? But Dora says, I always get everything on my list and plenty of surprises, too. But I just say, Dara, suppose just one time Santa couldn't find something or an elf broke an item loading it up in the sled. What would happen then? But Dara says, no, 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 that would never happen, and she pranced out of my room. And I stood there feeling wise that I knew what could be true and all what could happen even when you least expect it. One day somebody's going to teach that Dara a lesson, and this will be a big Christmas for her because she will have to share with old Ellen. Her mama all but said so. All I asked for was the pack of paper, but she looked at me like she was thinking of some surprises or just some small treats to go along with it. She could not believe that was my whole request, and I bet she is racking her brain to come up with something else for me. She's already said I am smart one time, and she was nice enough to ask me if I wanted anything in particular. Yes, old Nadine has something up her sleeve. I just hope my present for them is good enough. And just so it does not get lost in the shuffle of paper and bows and all the packages under the tree, I better present the picture to them on Christmas Eve. Then it will stand out. Then she will hang it on the wall right away, and we will all get a warm spot looking at it. So if you two would sit there on the couch and hide your eyes, I have a little something I want to give you. Just let me go back in my room and I'll be right back. Don't open your eyes, I say to them. And I'll leave them on the couch together, probably with their hearts racing around about what they might see when old Ellen returns and says, okay, you can look now. So what do you think? I ask them because they have not spoke yet. Why, Ellen, that is really nice, Nadine says. Dora wants to know if I trace the cats. That makes me boil, but since it is Christmas, I say, no, Dora, I painted it all my own self for you and your mama to hang in your living room or anywhere you see fit. She says that again about the tracing, and I double up on the niceness. No, Dora, I tell her I drew these kitties with you in mind. Her mama says they look sweet, and she'll hang the picture first thing tomorrow. What's wrong with right now, I ask her. Well, it needs a frame, honey. A picture as pretty as that calls for a nice frame, she said. I reminded her that the store would not be open tomorrow on account of Christmas, but I already took care of all that. She wants to know what I mean. And then I fanned all the frames I had made out of colored paper across the floor and told them they could have the frame of their choice, and then I would assemble the whole business right here tonight. Dora asks her mama if she plans to put some old tacky paper frame on their wall, and her mama says she should be nice to me because this is all so cute. But it is not cute, and it is not a game, I want to say. I wanted to scoop the cats and the colored frames up and burn them and forget I had tried to appeal to somebody and look at them now making fun of me. But I left it all there on the floor and walked away. And on the way back to my room where I stayed all night and half listened for hoofs stomping and bells jingling, I heard Nadine say, Ellen has tried very hard to please us and you have hurt her feelings. Sugar, listen to me. Even though we might think it might be silly or a bit cheap looking for us, we still need to act nice, okay? Now, when Ellen comes back out of her room, Mother wants you to be friendly. Now, let's put that picture up like we think it's the prettiest thing we've ever seen. Then, after she's gone and it's just you and me again, we'll take it down, okay? I stood in the kitchen and heard all that, and you can bet it burned me to a crisp. I felt my chest all the way up through my neck clear to my hair turn red. And I walked the rest of the way to my room, where I stayed all night, not able to sleep with my anger and my shame and the loudness of my wanting to hear something landing on the roof. And I never heard what I did not expect to hear, but there was the lie of the morning voice that said, "Wake up, Ellen, and come see what Santa Claus has brought you." And I went in their living room and stood with them in the ghost of last night's words and saw Dora already pulling the drawers off the doll, oh, just the one she had always wanted that walks and talks and pees like a live baby. And I wish I saw Starletta there again with her colored baby in the tiny bed. But it is Dora who has so much she does not know what to play with first, and I still want to see Starletta with the town and the picture books, the clothes and socks and the Lincoln logs. And all I wonder is why I do not hate Starletta. And there is Dora again, moving all around the tree, touching all she has and stepping over the clothes and the socks to get at the toys. So I will not get to tell Dora I told you so. So she will not come running to me mad for the first time that she had to share one thing just one day out of her life. No, she will not slow down in the circle she has made around the tree because there is no reason for her to hate me today. But I have the hate in me strong when I wonder again why I have to watch this. Why does somebody bring me here to see this that I do not want to see, I wonder, and feel something in my hand that must be my present. And Nadine says she knows that is exactly what I wanted, and I'm so peculiar and hard to buy for that she thought she'd play it safe and get me exactly what I asked for. And that was all. So what do you do when that spinning starts and the motion carries the time wild by you, and you cannot stop to see one thing to grab and stop yourself? You stand still the best you can and say strong and loud for the circle of spinning to stop so you can walk away from the noise. That is how I walk then. That is how I walk then from Dora and her tree and Nadine and the pack of white paper I threw at her feet. I stayed in my room by myself and thought about how much longer I intended to be in that house. I knew then where I was headed, but I needed to collect all the particulars like the address. Nadine knocked on my door a few times and said she thought it was very unladylike to throw a gift back at somebody. Then she said for me to come on out and we could all be friends. That could make you madder than you were to begin with, but it just depends on the way you see things. After I had myself some time to be straightened out and not so hot, I decided on some revenge. Sometimes that is the best thing, but usually it helps you to think about a revenge plan without carrying it out. But Dora and Nadine would get the works, I decided. I could only think of one thing Dora did not have and most likely would not ever have, and that was a boyfriend. She liked boys just fine, and I even heard through a grapevine she promised a couple of boys she would let them feel of her. Then when she chickened out, I imagine the boys were pretty hot. They say at school Dora is all flirt. So if I could round me up a boyfriend and sport him around in front of Dora, I could bring her down a notch or two and feel pretty good my own self. Except we are not in school over the Christmas holiday, so there is nobody around for me to select as an appropriate boyfriend. He would need to be somebody smarter, nicer, and certainly much better looking than anybody old Dora could ever scare up. I still laugh when I think back on all this. Since I did not have a boy to produce in the flesh, then she had to take my word for it. I had to be very convincing, and he needed to be somebody she would never run into and check my story. When I had it all nailed down in my head, okay, I told Nadine and Dora they could come in my room, that I was sorry about throwing the paper. I said everything they wanted to hear. Then, I said, with all the excitement, I forgot to show you something. I did not say what it was right away because that would not be good for their suspense. What are you talking about? Dora asked. I had to make all this quick because I knew her head was overoccupied with her own presence. I said my boyfriend gave this to me last week when you two were in town. His mama rode him over here, and he gave this to me last week, and I've been waiting for just the right time to tell you about it. Lord, I'm so proud I just couldn't hold out another day. Well, let's see it, Nadine says. So I took my microscope out of the closet and said, isn't it beautiful? I had my toes crossed in my shoes, hoping all this would work. Dora just said, ha, I didn't know you had a boyfriend. Well, I do. I've never seen you with one at school. I can see everything you do at recess and lunchtime. I've never seen you talking to anybody hardly except that little nigger girl. I don't believe you. Well, it is true, I told her hard. Okay, then, what's his name? Nick Adams is the one I would have picked out to love if it was up to me, so I said his name as honest as I could. I figured I was safe with him because of Dora's reading habits. He doesn't go to our school. You're making him up. Whoever said he went to our school, I asked her, and made my voice mysterious like Nick Adams might just be an international spy or a trapeze artist. You never know. That really gave Dora and Nadine something to think about. Then I knew I needed to draw attention off the boy and onto the lovely present he got me. How do you like it? I asked Dora. She had moved close in on her mama like I was about to bite her, like she had just found out a dark secret of mine that I kept hid because it likes to hurt pretty girls with blonde curly hair. How do you like it, Dora? I asked her again. Her mama says they have those things at the doctor's office, and what do I think I'm doing with one whether a boy gave it to me or not? I just say I use it to look at paramecia, diatoms, or euglenas. Where are they, Nadine wants to know, like I might be hoarding wanted criminals in my closet. They're on these glass slides. I handed one to Dora, who reported she did not see a thing, and who did I think I was to tell so many lies on Christmas? I told Dora it took a trained eye, and if she ever got enough sense to enroll in the smart science class, she might learn what I was talking about. And that did it for me. As you would say, I was washed up. Nadine said I was an ungrateful little bitch and I needed to have the hell beat out of me. And then when she got up and walked toward me, I told her flat out not to touch me or I would kill her. I said that low and strong as my daddy said it to me. I said it with my eyes evil so she would think about how I had been found in a house with two dead women and she might just see herself for 1 second as number three. She just said for me to get out, to find my evil little self some hole to crawl in, that she didn't want me to begin with, that Betsy didn't want me either, that all she and Dora wanted to do was to live there alone, and she would be damned if she would tolerate me or my superior little self another day. That is when I told her I thought she was the crazy one, that she and Dora had told each other so many lies about the way the world worked that they believed them. You two are bumping around in this house lost and foolish over each other. You two are the same as the people who would not believe the world was round. That is exactly what you are like. Then she wanted to know where I got such a smart mouth. From your own mama is what I said. Dora the whole time was sitting on my bed sniffling because somebody had spoiled her Santa Claus. Nadine said she would call the damn judge at home and get me out of her house. She didn't care if I was 11 or 30. She didn't have to put up with that sort of meanness from anybody. So I packed that afternoon. I had not planned on leaving in such a huff like that, but when you have to go, you just have to go. I had not even had time to do my research on where the foster lady lived or her telephone number. I said to Dora, do you know that foster lady's first name? I need to call her to tell her I'm on my way. What foster lady? She asked me. The lady in church with all the girls. Hell, Dora, if you kick me out of your house on Christmas Day, the least you can do is answer a simple question. Well, I don't know her first name. Well, then where does she live? I say with my voice sniffly to match hers. She lives in the red brick house between the nigger church and Porter's store. That's way on the other side of school. Well, that's exactly where she lives. I don't make up stories, she said to me proud. Well, wake your mama up and ask her the lady's first name. No, I will not. She's in there with a sick headache you caused, and I will not bother her on account of you. But as soon as she feels better, I know she is planning to get rid of you, and I'm glad. Oh, hush, Dora. I just kept packing my box. Why are you so dressed up, she wants to know. Because I have to take care of some business and I need to look good. Well, if you ask me, I'd tell you to take a bath and do something about your hair. But I don't care what you look like, just as long as you leave. Get on out of here and let me finish up, then I'll be out of your hair for good. You better wait until my mama wakes up. You better hush, Dora. I've done my share of that kind of waiting. You can wait here until you are blue in the face, but not Ellen. And when I finished packing, I walked out of their house and all the way to my new mama's, all the way past the school, on the other side of the store but just this side of the colored church. And when I got there, I ran a quick inspection and found myself fit to meet a new mama. She'll remember me and my dress. I already knew everything I planned to say to my new mama. Ever since I saw her at church, I rehearsed what I would say and a variety of answers she might give me. I just hoped I had made a good impression when she spotted me at church. I had on the same clothes and my hair bangs were stuck down the best I could manage with just spit to work with. She's bound to recognize me, I thought. I am not just a face in the crowd. So I stood in front of her house with my box and tried not to think about where I would go if she said she had a house full of girls already. And I decided that if she turned me down, I would just have to give up. I racked my head trying to think of another place, but I was fresh out of folks. There was always Julia and Roy, but I was too wore out to track them down. I saw her girls moving around inside the house. They had the curtains pulled back, and I could see her girls milling around. They will know me from school, I thought. To be sure, they will remember me and say, "Oh, yes, you're in the fifth grade." I always saw her girls separate at school. I would have never put them together in this house. Lord, I thought that house could try out for a greeting card. Merry Christmas from the Fosters, it might say. And I said then, "Ellen, you can stand out here and freeze, or you can knock on the door." So I went ahead and got my bag of money ready, and I knocked. I had saved a bundle just in case something like this ever came up and I needed some cash. I started with the $80 I stole from my daddy, plus the $20 he left me at school. I picked up a little here and there. Roy and Julia gave me an allowance, and I kept the change cleaned out of my mama's pocketbook. Now I had accumulated $166 to offer my new mama-to-be. That is not a fortune, but you don't find many girls with that much cash to offer up front for room, board, and some attention. I figured it would let her know right away that I mean business. She came to the door, and there I was. I tried my best to look proud. She asked me more questions right off than I could answer, like, "Are you cold? Are you hungry? Where did you come from? Would you like to come inside? What's your name? Why are you outside? Were you in an accident? Who are you?" Lord, I said to myself, she is really interested in me. I started out by saying, "I would like to come in, and no, I have not been in an accident. I came here by myself. I mean to be here." I went in her house that smelled like a Christmas tree, and I saw fruit laying all around in bowls. And somebody fried a chicken in this house yesterday. I could smell that separate from the Christmas tree scent, and I wondered if they had any wings or thighs left in the refrigerator. "Why don't you come back here and warm up? Come on back to my room," she said to me, and then she yelled for Stella to take my box for me. Stella and the other girls had the parades turned up loud, and they were sprawled out on the floor relaxing like you're supposed to do on Christmas Day. I followed her back to her room and took off my coat, and she noticed my dress right away. "What a pretty dress," she said. "You sure are mighty spiffed up to be out walking on Christmas. Tell me, honey, did you run away?" I told her I did not. "I am not in trouble," I said, "but I do need a place to stay. What do you think of me staying here?" "Well, I've had some pretty odd requests before, but this is the oddest yet. I need to find out who you are and a few other things like your parents' names. And you're sure you didn't run away from home? I bet your mom and dad are pretty worried about you right now." No, they aren't. They are both dead, and I have just been thrown out of my aunt's house. You might know her, Nadine Nelson. But it is no use to call her and ask her to come fetch me back. She told me flat out to leave. Well, how did you know to come here? Last Sunday at church I saw you and your girls, and I asked Dora who you were. She told me, and I figured since you already had some girls about my size, that you might be able to squeeze me in. I planned to come on New Year's, but here I am today. I usually get children referred to me through the court. I've never had a situation like this. Let me think on this. I can sleep on a cot. Oh, the room for you isn't a problem. I have a bedroom that's not in use. It's just more complicated than you know. Well, I got something to help you make up your mind. What? And I shook my cash money out on her bed and said it's $166 there. You can count it yourself if you don't believe me. It's mostly in $1, so it looks like it's more than that. But I want to pay you that money so we can keep this all on the up and up. That way you and me will be even. You can get the money and I stay here until I graduate from high school. How does that sound to you? I can't take the money. I'll tell you what. I'm going to call County Social Services first thing in the morning and we'll get the ball rolling. I can't promise you anything, but if you need a place as badly as it appears, then we would welcome you here. That sounded a little bit like something from one of my old books, but I had waited so long to believe somebody that I just listened and believed. And then she hugged me. She leaned over to me and pulled me up next to her, and it was just like what I wanted it to be. That is when she squatted down in front of me and asked me my name. I told her Ellen. Then she said, Ellen, I bet you never thought old Santa Claus would bring you a new mama for Christmas. That is where I got the name New Mama. And then she got teary-eyed, and I told her there was just a couple of things I needed to know before I unloaded my box and settled in that room she mentioned. What's that? Well, I need to know if you're pretty healthy or if you have a disease or bad habits like drinking. Also, are you generally friendly, or do you have days when you act crazy or extra mean? Why, Ellen? I just need to know. Okay, I'm healthy as a horse. Nobody here drinks or smokes. And to have a house full of children, I think I'm pretty even-tempered. How's that? Thanks, I said. That's exactly what I needed to know. Great, let's get you settled in a room, and then I'll get supper on the table. I bet you're starved. I sure am. Do you happen to have some cold chicken in your refrigerator? I thought I smelled some on the way in. That's quite a nose you have there, she laughed and said at the same time. I haven't cooked chicken in 3 days. Well, something that good generally hangs in the air a while. And while she fixed supper, I unpacked my box and lay down to look out the window. I was glad to rest. My arms were sore from toting the box, and even when I laid out flat and still, my legs felt like they were walking again, but I would not ever move from there. I have laid in my bed many days since that first afternoon I heard her in the kitchen, and I am always as glad to rest as I was then. That day I looked around the room at the curtains and bedspread and the pillow sacks the girl before me picked out. My new mama sewed for her, too. Sometimes I wonder what the girl is doing now, and I bet to myself she is not a crook. No, I bet she is somebody decent, because she had somebody decent to love her good. She might not have had all the money I had to pay her new mama, but she got some dingle ball curtains and clothes sewed pretty for her anyway. My new mama never spent my money. She keeps it pushed back in the hall closet. I found it one day when I was rambling. The money bag has my name Ellen on it and the date I moved in here. Now I can turn out to be different, too. I could have been a hobo. If my new mama and her girls had gone on a vacation, there is no telling where old Ellen might have turned up. If I think about my life like that, I can see how lucky I am. Since my first day here, all I've felt is luck coming my way. I never thought I would have it this good. The other girls know they are lucky to be here, too. Nobody ever says it out loud, but whenever I hear Stella crying in her room, and then I hear my new mama tell her she understands and she is a good girl and not a bad girl, then I know Stella is having her back rubbed, and I know she is glad to feel her new mama's hands. You don't need to see through the walls here to know when my new mama is alone with one of her girls, telling them about how to be strong or rubbing their backs. You can imagine it easy if it has happened to you. And there have been more than a plenty days when she has put both my hands in hers and said, if we relax and breathe slow together, I can slow down shaking. It always works. And there was a day last year when she said, if I didn't cry sooner or later, I would bust. That is something I am still working on. I think how good it would feel, but there is always my mama's mama's voice telling me to cry so she can slap me. My new mama says that all that will be over soon. She said that with a guarantee. I have some other things to work on, but at least I am somewhere friendly and nothing new bad has happened to me since I got here. That is something when you think about it. Nobody has died or blamed me for anything worse than overwatering the terrarium, but you can always stick some more ferns in the dirt. My new mama said it was not the end of the world. Every day I tried to feel a little better about all that went on when I was little. About all I have to straighten out is me and Starletta, but I can take care of that this weekend. You know she will be here after school today, and I am ready. My new mama has sewed some S's on a set of towels just for Starletta. That would really be something to walk in a white toilet and there is a bathtub clean as a whistle and towels just for you. I wonder if Starletta would let me take a bath with her. She might already be modest, though. She has started to walk with a little twist since she unplaited her hair. But I told her to bring her hair supplies. I sure would like to feel her fingers working fast in my hair again. God, a day can go by slow when you are dying for it to fly. Oh, Starletta, I say in my head all morning, and then I go in the lunchroom and see her mama has her scrub gleaming brown, and Lord, look at her all dressed up in a jumper and a round neck collar shirt. She has on her Sunday shoes, and I know without looking her drawers have rows and rows of lace across the tail. It is all I can do not to break out of my lunch line and run over there and make sure she has brought her suitcase or bag or box or just anything as long as she didn't forget she's coming home with me today. But I wait to buy my milk in the line like I should. Then I find her sitting with all her colored friends and I say loud, have you got everything all packed to come to my house all weekend? And she reaches under the table and drags up a grocery bag folded over the top that I know is filled with pajamas and drawers and her personal hygiene. Good. Well, you can meet me at my classroom when the bell rings and I'll take you to my bus, okay? And then I eat my soup and dread the afternoon and all that time that is keeping me and Starletta apart. So this is Starletta, my new mama says. Ellen told me what a pretty girl you are and I can see it is the truth. I want you to make yourself right at home this weekend, and if there's anything you need, you just let me know. We had not rehearsed that last part. I think that is a nice touch. Then my new mama squeezes all her girls hello, and I introduce Starletta to Roger the baby. He does not want to meet anybody new right now because he is loving up on Stella. Okay, everybody has met you, so let's go on back there and I'll show you where to put your stuff. Starletta looks all around at how clean everything is, and I know she has her eye on the scratchy carpet, so I tell her my new mama sucks all the dirt up with a thing, and you could roll all over this house and never get dirty. I can look in her eyes and see her mark that down on her list of things to do this weekend. When she puts her clothes away, and after I show her the toilet, I say we need to rest a while because that is what I always do between school and supper. But what I really want to do is get her off by herself so I can talk to her good. I need to tell her about what all I have up my sleeve fun for the weekend, and then I have some big things to tell her. You change out of your school clothes and put on some breeches. Did you bring some breeches? If you didn't, you can probably fit into a pair of mine. You are about as big as me. Look at us there in the mirror. She is still about a hand smaller than me, though. Come on and crawl up here and rest with me for a while. This is the way I always do. Let's talk some now. I'll start, I say to her, but I do not look at her face, but up at the ceiling, but I feel her laid out flat and still beside me waiting for me to begin. Starletta, I've looked forward to you coming to my house, and I hope you have a fine time here. I sure like it here. Do you remember me living with my daddy and how I used to come to your house so much? I sure do, she says to me, and it takes twice as long for her to get that out as normal because she stutters bad and she gets frustrated. Well, I came to your house so much because I did not want to be with my daddy, and mostly because I like you so much. Even if my daddy had been president, I would have still run down to your house whenever I needed to play. Do you believe me? And I look at her so she can nod and will not need to speak. She hates to talk. Starletta, I always thought I was special because I was white, and when I thought about you being colored, I said to myself, it sure is a shame Starletta's colored. I sure would hate to be that way. White people selling your mama's quilts like they do, and the three of you live in that house that's about to fall down. I always went away from your house wondering how you stood to live without an inside toilet. I know your daddy just put one in, but you went a long time without one, longer than any white folks I know. And when I thought about you, I always felt glad for myself. And now I don't know why. I really don't, and I just wanted to tell you that. You don't have to say anything back. You just lay there and wait for supper. And I will lay here, too, and wait for supper beside a girl that every rule in the book says I should not have in my house, much less laid still and sleeping beside me. But while I watch her asleep now, I remember that they changed that rule, so it does not make any sense for me to feel like I'm breaking the law. Nobody but a handful of folks I know pays attention to rules about how you treat somebody anyway. But as I lay in that bed and watch my Starletta fall asleep, I figure that if they could fight a war over how I'm supposed to think about her, then I'm obligated to do it. It seems like the decent thing to do. I came a long way to get here, but when you think about it real hard, you will see that old Starletta came even farther. And I watch her resting now because soon we'll all be eating supper and maybe some cake tonight. And I say low, Starletta, you sure have a right to rest. And all this time I thought I had the hardest road to hoe. That will always amaze me.
Ellen Foster was written and read by Kay Gibbons. Abridged for audio by Jan Werner. Editing by Melanie Ryder and Kenton Jacob. Post-production by Melanie Ryder. The mix engineers were Fran Pierce and Michael Jones. The associate producer was Sloan Seaman. Ellen Foster was produced and directed by Jan Werner. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.